spanning sea throughout the solar system and extending to interstellar regions beyond. This is the Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you happen to be, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here. If you're interested in the world of the strange and unexplained, you are plugged into exactly the right place, because that's the world in which we travel. It's the pool in which we swim each and every night, right here, Monday through Friday. Some of you are new to the Kevin Smith Show. Welcome. We're glad to have you. And for all of you, new and regular listeners alike, welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm here because you have a right to know and because you matter. We talk about things here at the Kevin Smith Show that mainstream media wouldn't touch with a 100-foot pole. Sometimes people say, oh, well, you know, he'll just have anything on the show. You know what? Thank you. I appreciate that. I will talk about anything in the world of the strange and unexplained, and we'll turn rocks over and examine and ask questions and decide whether we think those are real or not. You decide. I don't decide. Well, I decide for me, but I don't decide for you. It is a totally non-agenda show. And it's wide open. Tonight, we're going to be talking about something that a lot of people have a great deal of interest in, and that is this thing about alien-human hybridization. You know, is it real? Some people think it is. Some people think it isn't. Those who think it is, among them are some who know, or they say they know, and then there are people who just believe. Well, we want to get out of the belief business. That's for religion. And we want to get into knowing. We want to know, is it real or not? If it is, then it is, whether you believe it or not. So we're going to be talking with Brett Oldham this evening. And Brett has spent a lot of years researching this and has some personal information that he can throw into the mix as well, and he's written a book about it. We're going to be talking about that subject and that book tonight, and we'll do that on the other side of the break. Very quickly, let me say, for those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, you don't know about it, but we have an absolutely fantastic newsletter. It's called The K-Files, and it's free. Free. Absolutely free. Not Washington, D.C. free, you know, that has strings attached. Really free. And all you have to do is just scoot over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click where it says K-Files. Subscribe. You're going automatically to get an email that has a link in it to activate your subscription. Click that. You're done. That's it. And you can unsubscribe anytime you desire to unsubscribe. Okay? It's really that simple. And it really is free. We've been publishing that now for, well, started in the year 2000. And on May the 11th, we will be celebrating our 13th anniversary. And So we've been publishing it all that time. It's pretty good. All right, we're going to step away for that break, and when we come back, we'll be talking with Brett Oldham. All of the music used here at the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. Most of it from independent artists at musicalley.com. Go over to musicalley.com. Check out thousands of artists and thousands of great independent tunes. Musicalley.com. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, as I stated earlier, is Brett Oldham. And this is his very first time to be with us. It's not his first time at all to be interviewed on radio or television. He's been interviewed in a lot of places. Let me tell you a little bit about Brett. He's been researching the paranormal since his teen years. Together with his wife, Gina, they are called the Halo Paranormal and are based out of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Their research encompasses a wide spectrum of the paranormal, including ghosts, UFOs, and cryptozoology. They have been featured on numerous radio shows, magazine and newspaper articles, internet, local and national TV in the USA, New Zealand, and Europe, including shows on Bio, Discovery, CBC Canada, and TV7 in Bulgaria. He's the author of a book called Children of the Greys, which is a personal account of his lifelong alien abduction experiences and ghost stories. He's author of Ghost Stories of Las Vegas as well. And it's my pleasure to say, Brett, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. We're glad you're here.
Thanks for the invite, Kevin. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and to speak with your audience and to you.
And we're, as I said, glad you're here. When I got your email and read your bio and read about this book, obviously I was instantly interested in having you be my guest here on the show, because we do talk about the whole thing about, you know, UFOs and alien abduction, and we have talked a lot about the hybridization as well. Share with us just a little bit, a thumbnail sketch, if you will, of the book.
Well, my experiences started when I was 5 years old, living in the country in southern Illinois. It was my first abduction experience, and pretty much had the memories suppressed until my 20s when I began having anxiety attacks, and really for no reason. And I had to seek therapy for them. I mean, I've been a musician, been in front of people, I've been an athlete when I was younger, certainly was used to being in front of people and in crowds and everything, and just had these anxiety attacks coming out of nowhere. And through the therapy and relaxation, meditation, and all of a sudden, what really was causing the problem of the anxiety attacks came to surface, and the memories of these abduction events just opened up like a floodgate. And they just kept coming really for the next couple of years like that. So I really was quiet about it for over 20 years. And it got to the point where I'm not getting any younger. And I had a lot of details about what happened to me. And I didn't want others to have to suffer in silence like I did for fear of the ridicule. And that kind of went on back in those days. It's a lot more open now. And I wanted to be able to be a voice for those people and to make the public more aware that this is a really worldwide phenomenon. It's happened on a grand scale. And so that's pretty much where Children of the Greys came about.
Okay, so Children of the Greys is really kind of a personal journey.
It sure is. It starts from the beginning and pretty much chronicles quite a few of the abduction events that I've had. The title comes because of an event that happened to me where I was really showed a hybrid child and asked to interact with that child. This was after an event that happened in 1988 when I was living with my then girlfriend, and we were both awakened in the middle of the night by a typewriter that had been on a nightstand in the room, and it got knocked off, and it made a loud boom, and it woke us both up, and we opened our eyes to see four aliens in the room. She saw three of them, I saw four. One of them was standing out of her sight in the back part of the room, and we both, to this day, still have conscious memories of it. We just appeared on a television show talking about it. I hadn't spoken to her in over 15 years and had no idea what she remembered about or if she remembered anything at all, but she did, and she remembered quite a few of the same details that I did. So it was two people that had been taken at the same time. During that time, at the time that we were taken, she was just under 4 months pregnant, and she had been going to her her doctor on a regular basis and just had a checkup a few days before that. And after we were left the room, we blacked out, both of us. When I opened my eyes again, it was a horrific sight for me, because we were both on tables, and to my right, they had her, and they had her kind of up in stirrups like a gynecologist would do here.
And this was, now you say they had her. Who is they?
This is the typical Grays that I've had experiences with my whole life, and they were. So that's who I'm referring to as they. And they were surrounding me as well. I've never seen so many of them at a time. And they forced me to watch it. They were taking the fetus from her. I tried to turn away. I tried to, you know, I was extremely angry. I didn't want to accept what was happening. And one actually came around the top of the table and put his hand over my head and slightly turned it back toward what was happening to her. She was screaming, you know, please don't take my baby. So obviously she knew what was going on as well. And they took the fetus from her. I was beyond angry. It was terror at first, and terror turned to anger, but there was nothing I could do about it. And the next morning we woke up, and there was a little bit of blood on the bed, and she rushed to the restroom, and she called out to me. She says, I'm bleeding. I think you better call the doctor, which I did. And we were only about 15 minutes away from the doctor's office. We rushed up there. The doctor immediately put her in the hospital, which is directly across the street. And this happened in Las Vegas. And he came out. Actually, my mother and her mother both came down to the hospital, and the doctor came out, and he said, well, I don't understand, but there's nothing in the womb. It's like somebody's already cleaned the womb. He goes, I just examined this woman a few days ago. It was a perfectly normal pregnancy. I see no reason for this to happen. But he says, there's nothing for me to even clean out. And I had witnesses that actually heard that conversation from the doctor, being puzzled as to what happened. Both of us still remembered it. We both knew. I actually turned to my mom at that time. I was sort of in shock by it all, and just looked at her and said, they took it. And she, I'm not sure if she even knew what I was talking about at that time, but, and we were really quiet about it. We were just kind of both went into shock, really. And then several years later, about approximately 3 to 4 years later, we weren't together, and I was taken again, and I was taken before that, but this particular time, two of the small Grays led me down into a large room I'd never been into before. It was really dimly lit, which is also very odd. And there was a small ramp going down to a brightly lit door area. That out of that, they left me there alone and didn't really tell me why. And out of that door area, I saw a figure come walking toward me. And as it got closer, I noticed that it was a female, and it was a female hybrid. And it was she was carrying a child. And she walked up to me and set the child down. The child looked, you know, to compare it to Earth years, maybe about 3 to 4 years old, and you know, toddler type. And she telepathically told me to interact with the child. She told me it was my child. I refused. I said I didn't accept that. And she kept insisting that I interact with the child, which I didn't really want to. But then I started looking at the child, which is actually a depiction on the cover of my book. And it's a very close depiction of what I actually saw. And there was something about the way that the child looked at me, and the softness in her eyes. I mean, it was shocking to look at her because she was unusual, but at the same time, there was like a certain softness about her, the expression and stuff that she looked at me. She never communicated anything to me. The child didn't. So I kind of knelt down and started kind of just talking to her a little bit, and actually ended up picking her up and kind of putting her on my knee, and and just kind of interacting with her, playing with her a little bit for a few minutes, and sort of did feel a bond. I mean, I have to say, I really did. Whether or not she was actually the fetus, part of the fetus that was taken, or had anything to do with me whatsoever, I don't know. But it did seem like I was bonded to her in some way. And they kind of let it get to the point where they must have known that I was feeling that kind of bond, and that's when they decided to take her back. And then she just walked away with her. And I actually felt kind of sad at the time. And since then, I've always hoped that on a subsequent abduction that I would see her again. It's been all these years now, and I've never seen her again. I don't know what happened to her, but
have there been subsequent abductions?
Oh, absolutely. They continue to this day. As I've got older, they're not as frequent as they were back, in my 20s and 30s when I was in my prime, but it still happens. It's more like every few months now. They would go in spurts before, but now it's a little slower now. So I've had plenty of opportunities to experience her again. Never did, but I always knew that if I ever did come out with all this stuff, that I would have her on the cover of the book, and it would be a homage to her.
All right, so people that are in our members community are watching on our private channel, and they're seeing the cover of your book, and this is, you say, this is what she looked like.
She looked very close to that. My brother is an artist in Las Vegas, and I described this in great detail to him. The only difference that she had a little whiter hair than we have on the book cover, but just for contrast purposes, it was kind of hard to get the whiter hair, but she looked very similar to that. It was a kind of a bluish gray eye color. And actually the taller female hybrid looked similar, obviously, but older, but had the same type of hair, same color anyway, just a little bit longer.
Okay, so for those who are listening, this is a very, very light-complected little girl. And on the cover, she has very light blonde hair, almost white. Her eyes look human, except oversized. They're larger. She has a very small nose. Other than that, she looks pretty human.
She looked very, very close to human. I mean, there was just those traits. The Grays themselves has very, very small nose, very, I mean, just thin slits for mouths. But she could closely pass if she was mixed into society. I don't think she could completely. There's enough differences that she would kind of stand out. But I think they're getting very close to being able to mix in with us. But at that point, back in that time, that's where they were at with things, and they do seem to the hair color seems to be the same on every hybrid I've seen.
And this was in what year that you were introduced to this little girl?
That would have been around 91, between 91 and 92.
All right, let's go to your abduction experience. Experiences. How old were you when the first one that you can remember took place?
I was 5, and I was living in a out in the country in southern Illinois, in an old farmhouse, and we had to shut off the top part of the house when it started getting. It was in the fall. My parents had shut off the top part of the house kind of for heating purposes, and so my brother and I, and my sister would sleep on the couch, and my brother and I would actually sleep on pallets on the floor during the winter months. And it was at that time I was downstairs sleeping on the floor, and I was awakened by a bright light coming through the window, very bright light, and just out of curiosity I got up to see what it was, And I was hearing, I was kind of hearing, being coaxed telepathically to come to the window. And as little boys would do, you know, you're gonna follow along, and that's what I done and did. When I went to the window, the front of the house, and we had these white kind of wispy curtains, and I just pulled them back. And when I did, directly on the other side of the window, I was face to face with a gray.
Did it frighten you?
It terrified me. I've had nightmares, really, to this day. My wife will tell you that actually the first 2 years we were married, I would have these nightmares, and most of the nightmares that I have is from the trauma that caused. You know, it just embedded in my mind at that age, and it was just something I could never shake, because to see, I had never been exposed when I was 5 years old. I'd never seen anything like that. I mean, now it's all over the media, but you know, I didn't have comic books. You know, I didn't ever see any kind of movie with alien. I had nothing to compare that to. And when it happened, and literally was just directly in front of my face, it was the most shocking, horrifying thing I'd ever seen in my life.
What happened next?
Well, there was two other ones standing a little bit distant back. And the next thing I know, I was on board a craft, or I'm assuming it was a craft. And
how did they get you out of the house?
Well, at the time, and it took me a long, long time to figure this out, I had no idea. I mean, I would, if I did happen to see them wherever I was at, I would black out. And then when I would come to again, then I would be wherever they would take me. And that was the case then. Now, I've actually seen it, and I'm firmly convinced that they're doing this interdimensionally. And
all right, we have to step away for a break, but we'll pick up there when we come back. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Brett Oldham. And Brett is sharing with us information about his lifelong experiences as an abductee and talking with us a little bit about this whole hybridization thing. And if you're just now joining us, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Brett, let's go back to these abductions and how they get you out of wherever you are. And you said as you've grown older, you've been able to actually see this happen. And you're convinced that it's being done dimensionally? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I definitely believe that they're doing this interdimensionally. And an example I can give you, this actually is a relatively recent event that happened a couple of years ago. I heard like a tapping on my bed, which is very unusual for them to do that. And my first inclination was ghost, because you know, there is a definite, maybe we can get into that later, but we can talk about the paranormal connection to all this, which goes back to this dimensional travel. But so I heard, you know, like this tap, 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 and like something was definitely trying to wake me up, and I opened my eyes, and it was actually right as at early morning dawn, and, you know, so there was some light coming in the room. It wasn't like pitch black or anything. And standing along the side of my side of the bed were three of the small grays. The unusual thing about it this time, and the thing is, I don't always see them in the room, but this particular time, they seem to want to wake me up for some reason. The thing that happened earlier with the girlfriend, I think when the typewriter got knocked off, was purely an accident. I don't believe they meant for us to wake up at that time, but this particular time, you know, instantly I got alarmed, because I don't like these things happening, obviously, and it's not something that I would wish on anybody. But I could see on the bedroom wall was no longer there, and there was an opening. It looked almost like a mirage, like you would see water in the desert, that was almost as high as the ceiling, but it was sort of like oval shaped, and there was a mist kind of thing around the edge of it that was probably about a foot to 18 inches. But through that, I actually could see into a craft, and I could see a couple other grays in that dimension. So they had opened up, you know, some kind of a portal, wormhole, or whatever you want to call it. It basically looked like it just stepped through it into my bedroom. And I know it sounds outlandish, and, you know, some people are probably scoffing at that idea, but, you know, as our science progresses in quantum physics and we learn more and more, there are starting to be a lot of people kind of coming on board with the possibilities of interdimensional travel. So, I mean, it wasn't that long ago everybody thought we lived in a three-dimensional world, and now they're saying, I think they're up to 11 dimensions at this point. So, you know, it's because we can't quite understand the science. I mean, everyone has to understand that these creatures, these species of aliens are hundreds of thousands of years more advanced than we are. So the things they're capable of doing,
at least maybe more.
Maybe more. You're right. I mean, we have no way of knowing, but so, you know, their technology and what they're able to do is so far beyond our understanding that, you know, it'd be like us going to try to show some primitive man how a cell phone works or something like that. You know, I mean, it's so they are definitely able to travel interdimensionally, and that's how they're taking us. You know, a lot of other abductees I've talked to have said, well, I remember like going through a wall or going through the roof of the house or stuff like that. And really, you know, if the dimensions are overlapping and you're getting taken that, then you're no longer of this dimension. Then that it would probably seem that effect would take place. Mm-hmm. I've never felt that personally, but I understand what they're talking about when they do say that.
In any of your abduction experiences, have you ever seen any humans? I'm not talking about hybrids, but humans, whether from Earth or somewhere else, humans in uniform?
I have. I've seen other abductees in like trance-like states, mostly being subjected to sexual experimentation, one time on a grand scale.
Now I'm talking about the abductors.
Yes, I have. And I've seen them and they, on a couple of occasions, and they seem very human. They're speaking very human out loud, not telepathically. They're wearing matching what seems to be uniforms, but with nothing. I mean, what I'm seeing has been like black, very tight fitting black uniform with no kind of insignia on anything on it.
What about the hat? What about a hat?
I haven't seen a hat, but I have seen them walking along inside. And one other time, this goes kind of back to the hybrid experiments. I was taken by a tall gray, and there. I would like to point out to the audience that there is a definite difference between the small grays that most people are accustomed to seeing and the tall grays. The tall grays are absolutely in charge. They're pretty much our size, and they dress differently, they act differently. They are absolutely in charge. I'm pretty much at the belief at this point that the small grays are quite possibly biological robots. They all kind of seem to have a hive mentality, very matter of fact, very work everything on logic, and they all kind of look and act the same, whereas the tall grays aren't like that. But at this particular time when I ran into what I perceived to be another human, I was walking, taken down this hallway by the tall gray who had friended me when I was 5 years old. That was one of the psychological things that they first did to me, to always this time, and he has been very cordial to me. Of all the terrible things that's been done to me, and he could have very well been the one that told him to do that, but I've never personally seen him do it. So I've always felt the most comfortable around him, and I was walking down a hallway with him. He was taking me to another area. They had been doing something to me. I don't remember this particular time, but I didn't have any clothes on, and oddly enough, I'm walking down it felt normal, but I was coming up the hallway was one of these guys in one of these tight black uniforms, and he was carrying something, and this could have been a thing to test me emotionally, because they do a tremendous amount of that. But he happened to stop, and whatever he was carrying, he was kind of holding it, you know, sort of like chest weight, belly, you know, right in this area, and it was covered in a blanket, it looked like, and he pulled back the blanket, and it was just like a hideous looking baby. It did not look like the hybrid little girl that I interacted with. It looked like some kind of mistake, like a lab mistake for sure, but it also was living, and I actually felt like sorry for it. And I don't even know why they were showing it to me other than to test my reaction to it. But by this point in time, I've come pretty much accustomed to trying my best to not play into their mind games, and I didn't react to it in any way whatsoever.
Okay, now this human, these humans that you've seen, do they all have the same color hair? And if so, what color?
Dark, black hair. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mustache? Yeah,
no facial hair. They're just short, black hair. And they're all pretty much pretty close to the same size. They're all Caucasian. I've only seen three. I've seen that guy, and then one other time, I woke up in what at this point I believe was not on their craft, because the lighting was much different. The lighting on their craft is lighting like we do not have here on this planet. You know, it doesn't filter into other rooms. They seem to have the capability of being able to have it stop at a particular area wherever they want. And in this particular case, it was kind of dark in this this room, but there was another person. I was left alone on these platforms that they put you on, and then to my right there was another person they were very interested in. Had us all stripped down, and they were doing their routine on them. And I was trying to see what they were doing. There was some equipment there, and to my left, I was pretty much paralyzed. I couldn't turn anything but my head, and I could see what the kind of counters and stuff that you see like in doctor's offices or labs. I really felt that this was like an earth-based place that I was taking this time. And another reason was because the light, it was very, very dimly lit where they took me this time, but the light to the doorway to my left was filtering in from the hallway, which on the crafts does not do that. So I heard footsteps coming, and I kept my head to the left, and they were escorting a woman in who, oddly enough, as it got closer, where I could see, was somebody that I hadn't met before, who had told me that they had, what's called the MLAB experiences. And she was in like a drug state or something. She was she had her eyes open, but she didn't seem to be coherent as to what was going on. And she was escorted by two guys that looked very similar to the guy I'd seen before in the hallway.
They're short in stature.
Average. They're not real. They're just average. They're not real tall. They're
like
just sort
5'8", 5'9", 5'10".
Right.
Short, dark hair.
Yep.
Kind of chunky, muscular.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't call them thin.
Black uniforms.
Very tight-fitting black uniforms. Mm-hmm.
All right. And have any of them ever had a conversation with you?
Well, I try. The only time that they did was that particular time, because they had this woman also stripped down. And one thing that caught my eye, besides recognizing her, I tried to speak to her, and she just was like in a state of almost, like comatose. I mean, except her eyes were open, and she wasn't acknowledging my existence. I mean, she just was staring out across the room, and they did like tell me to shut up. I mean, they told me to quit talking to her. But one of the things I noticed is that on her right side groin area, that they had a tag, and it was like a black. It was like a black kind of thing stuck to her, and I'd always wondered if it was some kind of identification thing. And I actually tried to see if I had one, but I couldn't see.
All right, so let's talk about that for a moment, because this started in Southern Illinois when you were 5 years old. It follows you to Las Vegas as an adult, and has followed you now to Tennessee. How are they tracking you?
It has to be implants. I don't know any other way they could do it. I had chronic nosebleeds many times through childhood. Went to the doctor. It got so bad, doctor couldn't find anything wrong. And I do have a memory of them sticking something up my nose, which I'm always have assumed was an implant. Once I have a memory of them moving it, removing it, and the nosebleeds have stopped ever since then. So they have to track us. There's just no other way that they could find us, those of us that this repeatedly happens, because it doesn't matter where you go, where you're at, they're going to come.
All right. We have to, on that note, step away for a break. And we will be back, ladies and gentlemen, right after this. And welcome back. You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show. This is The Kevin Smith. My guest is the Brett Oldham. And he is the author of a book called Children of the Greys. We're talking about all of that. And Brett, I was asking some questions about, you know, how they track you and everything. And you said, well, it's got to be some kind of an implant. Have you had any scans done, any MRIs or anything like that to see if you have implants?
No, I've never had anything like that done. I'd like to, actually. I've just, you know, MRIs aren't cheap, so another interesting thing that I hardly ever go to the doctor for anything. They seem to have been able to keep me extremely healthy all these years. Probably for their own interest more than mine, but that seems to be the case.
I've been asked, we had an experience, my regular audience knows about this, I've talked about it before, had an experience when I was 7 years old with my whole family, and we had missing time, there was a UFO and missing time and all this, and I've had people ask me a couple of things, like one, well, you know, have you ever thought about being hypnotized so you could remember what happened during that time? And my answer is, no, I don't care. I just don't care. But I've also been asked, have you ever had any scans done to see if you have implants? And the answer to that is the same. No, and I don't care. You know, whatever happened, happened. As far as I know, it's never happened again. And, you know, it's just not something that I just don't care. I'm quite happy with life as it is, and you know, if they come back and they want to dance, well, this time they'll be dancing with the devil. And so let me ask you, how do you feel about your experiences, positive or negative?
Well, first of all, that's a good attitude to have, what you have there, and I actually recommend that to other abductees or even people that can consider that they may have had one of these experiences or multiple experiences, because it's stuff that you really, for the most part, it's, as they say, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. I mean, it's something that you better be able to deal with, or know that you can deal with it if you do bring it to the surface, because you're probably opening up a Pandora's box. You might not want to see what's inside. So, like you said, live your life and go on. If it's not affecting you mentally or physically, a lot of people do go into addictions and different things like that, and not really knowing that the true cause was some kind of psychological trauma caused by these things, because it does and can do a tremendous amount of damage. So, you know, that's it. That's the first thing I would definitely tell people to leave it there. The regression therapy, I've never been regressed as far as to find out more details about the experiences, you know. So even when I wrote the book, because a lot of people will say, oh, well, they used to say this about Bud Hopkins, you know, he loaded it, you know. It was like he led him into where he wanted to lead him and things like that. And they can't say that about me, because I've never had regression therapy for the abductions. I had regression, and the therapy I went for was for anxiety attacks, and the stuff surfaced from that, because it's all locked away in your subconscious. So,
all right, so how do you look at all of these abductions and the experiences that you've had on board these ships at the hands of these non-Earthlings? Positive or negative?
I'm on the fence, mostly negative. There has been some positive things I've tried to draw from it. To just one of the things I've talked about is my health. I mean, I've just been tremendous. I've just been, you know, blessed with some people. You could say, okay, well, you got good genetics, but, and that could be part of it, I don't know. But I've been really healthy over the years, and the only thing I've ever really gotten sick with was sinus infections. So in that regard, I've also had a couple things happen to me, you know, that they've seemed to have taken care of medically. So in that regard, positive. And I have came back from these experiences with seem to have a higher vibrational rate than most people, which has sort of opened up like, you know, Reiki energy healing. You know, in the paranormal, I'm definitely like a beacon to the spirit world. From it, and I've learned when I was a kid, and it always happened to me, I was scared out of my mind, but as I got older, I recognized it, and I do try to use that now to help both the living and those on the other side. So that part of it's positive, but the negative far outweighs the positive. The stuff that they've done, the taking of sperm and the sexual experiments that they've done, I mean, it's basically it's sexual abuse. That's it in a nutshell. Psychologically, the things they've done, the emotional experiments that they'll subject you to, it's cruel. That's just all there is to it. So I don't know if they're doing it because I really sense a desperation in them for their own, for their whatever their agenda is, and I do believe it's to for the hybrid program. I think their race, something is dramatically wrong with them, and they admire us physically as a physical specimen. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're very thin, very frail. They admire and are fascinated by human sexuality, and also the emotional makeup. I mean, they're very void of emotions, and they're extremely interested in that aspect. So everything that they do centers around all those things. But
would you say that their agenda, for whatever reason, is basically to become us?
To become a better form of us. I mean, mentally, they're far, far superior. Far superior. I mean, people, you know, you say, well, why didn't you fight back? Yet you have no idea the strength of the mental capabilities of these beings. There is one time ever that I was ever able to do anything, and that was after I was taking therapy, and one of the therapists I was going to started teaching me self-hypnosis techniques, and I was getting pretty good at it. I would do stuff like mind exercises where I would go outside in the cold and without a shirt on and go in my mind that I was on a beach and warm my body, and I was doing stuff like that and getting pretty good at it. And I did all that to have some degree of control when they took me. And the only time I was ever able to break mentally the mental grip that they put on you was, I call it the intake room. There's the same spot that you end up like every time for the like a pre-examination thing before they're going to do whatever they're going to do. And there was three or four of them in there, and I waited, and I knew that I was not like had that paralyzed feeling like they normally put on you, and I just have been able to break it mentally. And when one of them came around on my right side, I like raised up and kind of screamed at him, and it was just the best feeling ever of all these experiences, because it was my only time that I had any sort of self-empowerment and any sort of control over the situation.
What was his reaction to it?
They didn't react in fear. They were confused because they are so logical based that if you do anything illogical, they're just confused. They don't know what to do. And they all stepped back. Kind of there was a wall at the end. And they were all just standing back by the wall and acted like they really didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I was just laughing. I mean, it sounds kind of funny, but it was just like after everything that had been done to me, and that one little simple thing was just a victory for me. Mm-hmm. And it was the only time I was ever able to do it, and it didn't last long. I mean, they took control pretty soon back after that, but the mental capabilities, you're going to do whatever they want you to do, whether you want to or not.
Well, I don't know if you know this about me, but my background is I was a cop, and I spent most of my adult career as a cop, locally, and then as a deputy sheriff, and then as international police, and at all those levels, forcing someone to do something against their will, taking them someplace they don't want to go against their will, those are crimes. Yep. And I've had people, we'll probably have some folks that will call tonight and tell me I'm wrong about this, and that's okay. They've told me that's the wrong attitude to have and all that, but I can tell you this, if they don't get control of me before that first foot comes off the ground, somebody's going to hurt. It's a crime. And, you know, we just had this story on the news just this week. The three young girls that were taken and kept for 10 years. That's a crime. All right, we have to take a break. And that might be a crime, too, but we got to do it. All right, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We are delighted to have you. You've missed a universe of information, and you have my sincere sympathy for whatever kept you away from the first hour. You also have my sincere and best hopes, dreams, prayers, and wishes that you never suffer that trauma again. We're talking this evening with Brett Oldham, and he is the author of a book called Children of the Greys. He's a lifelong abductee, started when he was about 5 years old, and we're talking about the alien-human hybridization program or project that seems still to be ongoing. And as we went away for break, Brett, I had made the point that, you know, taking someone against their will to some place they don't want to go and doing things to them they don't want done, that's a long list of crimes. And, you know, we've just had this week the story of the three girls that had been kidnapped and held captive for 10 years by this guy. And, you know, it's appalling. It's amazing. And it is definitely something that if it's a human that does it, every law enforcement agency that can get their hands on it wants a piece of that action. They want to enforce those laws. If you go to them and tell them that it's happening to you and that the abductors are not of this world, I can tell you, as a lifelong cop, they're not going to take it seriously. And yet it is apparently happening all over the world.
Yeah, it's happening on a much grander scale than people realize. And I think I do think there's like a paradigm shift happening where a lot of people are feeling a little bit more comfortable coming out with their experiences now.
When did you start talking about it?
Well, the book just came out. Mm-hmm. I have did a couple of presentations, but I've been pretty low key about it. I mean, years ago, I didn't even tell my family. And one of the reasons was that when I was younger, I had an enormous amount of ghost activity around me and just all kinds of a multitude of experiences, which actually is what got me into the paranormal to begin with, to figure out what was going on and to make it stop. And I would tell family members and stuff, and because of certain religious beliefs or whatever, you know, they would just say everything was a demon or whatever, or just basically go to bed. You know, it was just kind of, and it got to the point where I realized I was like on my own with that, for the most part. And so when I did come to the realization, I mean, I would have little things, little memories like before the anxiety attacks, before I started therapy and everything. And I did have a sense that something happened, but I was trying to be mm-hmm. in self-denial about it until I just couldn't do it any longer. So it's just one of those things that you try your best to deal with. And but I understand why people don't want to tell anybody, because a lot of people have a lot to lose. And so really it was a coaxing of a fellow abductee that I met here in Tennessee. His name's Sandy Nichols. He runs the Alien Research Group. And, you know, he kind of told me, like, look, you gotta tell your story. And my wife kept telling me the same thing. And I knew that if I did, that I could help other people to either relate to what happened to me and understand, get a better understanding of what happened to them, because it does help a lot when you're talking to other people that had similar experiences. And then I just want to do the best that I can to make the public aware of the reality of this situation. And it's just not something, you know, this is not a situation where we're all putting around and putting tinfoil hats and the whole little green men thing. Mm-hmm. People don't laugh at that anymore. It's just not funny, because this is a real psychological trauma that's inflicted on possibly millions of people. It's happened on a grand, grand scale. My book's only been out for a couple of weeks. And speaking of cops, I mean, I've got contacted already by a cop out of New York who was exactly the same situation. He's like, oh, because of my line of work, I couldn't, obviously, you know, I couldn't, who am I going to tell? And he didn't even want to tell his family. And I talked to him for 2 hours on the phone. So
yeah, see, I've said this too on the show. People need to realize that cops are not a different species.
Oh yeah, cops, my dad was a cop, so I totally relate. So
cops are you. They come from your neighborhood, okay? And they see things just like you do, and they have experienced things that are weird. Way weird, okay? But a cop can't talk about it. If he does, they'll psych him right out of his job.
Yeah, that's exactly what this guy was telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's had some... He actually saw the show that we did about my experiences, and that's how he looked me up and contacted me, because he's like, the same thing happened to me. And then he started just... The longer he talked, the more it just started coming out, and I could just feel, I could tell that he felt so much better just being able to get it out. And I recommend that in your case, you know, if you're comfortable and everything's and life is good, leave it where it's at. If it's bothering you and you're starting to have physical effects or psychological effects of it, get it out. Tell people, talk to somebody. I actually started a Facebook page, Children of the Grays, on Facebook, just for that reason. So people, I've started putting up therapist names. I put a couple up yesterday, one here in the Nashville area and one in Texas. And I'm going to continue to do that. And these are people that are willing to help other abductees without, you know, any judgment, any ridicule. I met a girl, this is how bad it is, or was, and I hope it's still not quite this bad, but I actually recently met a woman in her 30s who told me, and funny enough, she was from Las Vegas, lived there at the same time I did, and she told me that when she had the experiences when she was an early teen, that she actually remembered it and told her parents, and they put her in an institution. So, you know, that was a horrifying thing to hear. It's like bad enough that you're going through that kind of trauma, and then to have your own parents not believe you and send you to a doctor who then puts her in an institution for a couple of months. I mean...
Well, you know, in my case, by the way, folks, we are going to open the telephone lines here in just a moment so that you can join this conversation. But, in my case, I know everybody's not cut out of the same bolt of cloth, and I realize that. But in my case, it's not just that I have that attitude just with these experiences. I'm that way about everything. If I was in a fight last week, I don't even remember it or care about it this week. That was last week. I'm living this week, you know. And things that happened to me, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, things that happened to me last year, I don't even care about that. I don't think about that. I'm busy with today. But I realize there are people that the event is so monumental in their life that they just can't get past it. And, they keep reliving it, and instead of living now, they're dealing now with something that's in the past. And I think it's good that there are groups where they can, you know, they can go on your Facebook page, and there are other groups, and places where they can relate their story and talk and you know, kind of try to figure it out. But... let me throw this out and see what you think about it. You can't figure it out. There's no way to figure it out. You can get your mind around some of the details, but knowing why and why me and is it going to happen again? I mean, Those are things that I've had lots and lots of people on the show over these many years that, based on their testimony, and like your testimony here tonight, I would say, overall, you're not going to figure it out. You just have to come to grips with it and just deal with it and realize you're alive today.
That's exactly right. You got to let that part of it go. You can't, you got to let the why me go. I mean, I think it has something to do with genetics. There's certain people that meet a certain criteria that they're looking for, and that's the people that they seem to be coming after more than once.
What is your ethnic background?
I'm Native American and Irish and English.
There you go. That's the magic combination.
Yeah, I found that out myself also. And I do think that they stick in families, you know, like once that I've come out with everything, I've been talking to some relatives and they've told me some stuff that they've suspected, like all the way back to my great-grandfather had very similar things. Not that they talked about it or remembered it in terms that I am, but, you know, it was the same similar type of situation. He actually had like the energy thing going. They would pay him to Dallas for water wells back with the old days with the fork sticks and everything, and never sick a day in his life. And just the more it gets out, the more you see, like, you know, they seem to find a certain genetic line, and they seem to stick with it till it gets to the point where it's no longer of use for them. But that does seem to be the magic combination. I agree.
It happens also to be almost my background. I'm Native American and Celtic. Well, Irish is Celtic.
Yeah.
So, all right. I think what we'll do is we'll just go ahead and open up the telephone lines and invite the audience to join us. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It will work from anywhere in the world. On the other hand, we know it can be expensive for you to make an international long-distance call. And so if you're in a place where you would have to make an international call, you can go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down. You'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you'll see a link that says Flash Message for those outside the USA and outside of Canada. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, Jerome.
Good evening, Mr. Oldham.
Hi, Kit. How you doing?
Fine. I think one of the differences between Kevin's experience years ago with his missing time and yours is with yours, it seems like it's ongoing. And with Kevin's, from what I understand, is something may have or may have not happened, but he wasn't repeatedly violated at will.
In 2007, I woke up as I was being struck in the chest by one of these little short, black uniformed. How can I clean this up? And he was saying, "Stop fighting, GD it." And as he hit me in the chest. And he took a roundhouse kick to the head and didn't even blink. I kicked him hard enough to kill a horse. He didn't even blink, but he did knock me back on the bed again. And when I got back up, they were gone, him and two grays. So there have been, I don't remember being abducted, but there have been more than just that one experience.
Yeah, Jerome, I think a lot of times, sometimes they will come once, and you know, it's an experiment to see if you have the genetic makeup they're looking for. But a lot of times, the people just don't remember it. You know, it could have been multiple abductions. They just maybe remember one and don't remember all the rest of them. And that could very well be in Kevin's case that you know, he's got the first one with his family, and now this incident, which goes right along the lines with another abduction incident. So I would venture a guess, and pretty safe guess, that there's been more in between.
Well, Kevin, I apologize for limiting your experiences. I was unaware of that. But would you say that this short guy that you kicked, do you think he's human?
Yes.
And he was able to take a roundhouse.
Yeah. And, you know, he was speaking to me in English. He punched me in the chest. The punch in the chest, instantly, I was 100% totally, absolutely conscious. And I heard him say, "Stop fighting, GD." And I came, my feet left the floor. I landed on my back on my bed and came right straight up and made Chuck Norris proud.
Mm-hmm.
This guy didn't even blink.
How can you say he's human?
He looked human. Everything about him indicated he was human. But he had no reaction to having been kicked.
Brent, thank you for, you know, coming on the show. And is your father still alive?
Yes, he is.
Has he accepted this experiences of yours?
Yeah, he has. You know, he was. It's funny because I remember being having an actual sighting with him at one time, because back in the 80s, he was kind of skeptical about everything. And I was actually, he didn't really know a whole lot. I mean, I wasn't telling a lot of this even to my immediate family. I was really kind of fearful of it happening to them, because you just don't, just like I am now with my wife, I mean, you just don't want this happening to anyone. And but I remember being out on Lake Mead. We used to go out there and go fishing a lot, and it was daytime, and we had binoculars on the boat because we used to look at the bighorn sheep and stuff. And it was a real clear blue sky, out the western skies, you know, that go on forever, and clear blue sky. And I happened to notice something silver. And of course, some of the planes can look like that at times. The sun hits them just right and everything like that. But this object was very low, and it was a typical silver disc-shaped object. So I got the binoculars and I looked at it, and it was pretty much stationary. I could see it really well, and I had the binoculars to him, and it was because he was had his back to it at the time, and he turned around and you know, he found it, and I says, "What does that look like to you?" And he didn't really want to admit it, but he had to say it, and he said that it looks like, you know, the typical flying saucer. And the thing about it is that it would it kind of play with us for about 15 minutes. I mean, it would vanish and then appear again in a few you know 20, 30 seconds later, and just a little bit of other area of the horizon. And it did that for, like I said, you know, several minutes. And so at the end of it, and he couldn't deny what he had just witnessed.
Well, you know, it appears to me that this whole thing comes down to, like you said, genetics. I think we're dealing here with a dying race, and they're doing everything they can to prolong their death.
Well, you know,
and unfortunately, they're corroborating with our public officials or semi-public officials.
Yeah, that's one of the more alarming aspects of it, in my opinion, is that something, you know, whether it's black ops, which I'm sure it probably is, but that there is, you know, we're working in conjunction with them. So I'm sure, as a lot of people speculate, it's a technology trade-off. I mean, look how far the human race has come, even since Roswell. How much technology has been developed in that short amount of time compared to the rest of history? I mean, we made a huge leap, and we're doing nanotechnology now. You know, so and it wasn't very long ago we were just in cars going 25 miles an hour top speed. So, you know, we made a huge leap.
I think we traded with the devil. And thank you for being a guest. And Kevin, thank you for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for the call. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Listening to me across the world tonight, for sure, there are other people who have been through something very similar to this. Don't hesitate to call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Brent, I want to reassure you of something.
Yeah, go ahead.
This goes for the wannabes. I call them the wannabes, the powers that wannabe on this planet, as well as those who are doing the abductions. They may have minions doing their work, but karma knows no bounds.
Well, I am a believer in karma, so that is a comforting thought.
I saw a tweet today on Twitter that said, "Karma is only a bitch if you are."
That's right. and it knows no bounds. The ones who instigate it are going to get hit worst.
You know, it seems like, you know, I compare it sometimes. I even mentioned this in the book, that maybe they're in the Gray's case anyway. I mean, I do believe that there's we've been visited by other species, but in the Gray's case, I mean, are they really? If you look at what we're doing, I'm a big animal advocate. I mean, I do all I can for the rights of animals and against abuse and all that kind of thing, but if you look at what we've done and subjected to animals into labs and stuff, they try to validate it by, well, they're looking for a cure for cancer or this disease or that disease, but you know, they're doing stuff for cosmetics, even, I mean, stuff that there's no reason to do, and we have that kind of mental makeup in us to subject a species that we're superior to, and for supposedly our own benefit or our own good. So, you know, really, is the human race really that much different? I mean, if the Grays are doing this out of necessity, that would be the case. You know, if they're not, you know, then it's a different story. But I do think that they are.
The one story I've heard, it was actually heard on Kevin's show, is that the Grays are a dying race and they're fleeing from the others who want to exterminate them, because they are a bastardized race, and they are using us to integrate genetically with us, because as long as they have a human host or partially human host, they cannot be exterminated.
Yeah, I do think there's some underlying reason they've never exactly told me, but they're just...
All right, we have to step away for break. It is taking over. Brent, thanks for the call. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we shall return right after this. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Brett Oldham. And Brett, we've got a caller on hold, so let's go to the line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Mark from Mojave.
Okay, Mark.
I enjoy your guest, and I just want to say that recently I've been having marks on my chest. Pardon?
I said nothing. We were listening to you.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
I was saying that I've been having red marks on my chest in the shape of a star. And they appear when I have pains in my heart. And it's like, you know, I'm having my heart overhauled. Hello?
Mark, we're not talking. We're listening to you.
Oh.
Okay.
Brett. I've seen roughly about 200 UFOs out here in the desert. And some have been very familiar with me, like 20 of my attention. And I'm wondering if they're connected in any way to a possible visitation.
Connected in any way to what? Possible what?
To possible visitations.
Visitations. All right, Brett. What do you think?
Well, you want to pay attention to any kind of marks, unusual marks that come up on your body. I mean, that's a classic sign. So I would keep a diary of those. I'd take pictures of them and document them. A lot of people, myself included, when I first started getting, I've got some pretty severe scarring that's even been looked at by the doctors that asked me when I had back surgery, which I've never had. There's pictures of them in the book. The ebook will be a little bit clearer. It's coming out in a couple of days, because there's going to be a color in that, but you got to pay attention to those marks, because I mean, obviously they're not coming out of just magically appearing. So the red marks, you know, it's hard to say on that. I mean, if it turns into an actual scar, there's something that happened to me that actually I've talked to a couple different people as far as red marks, and I had red marks in my groin area, which wouldn't go away. It was like a blotch kind of thing. Actually went to the dermatologist. The dermatologist told me he had no idea what it was. And it came back two or three different times. Very difficult to get rid of. I ended up going to Chinatown in Las Vegas and getting some kind of, one of their herb shops there and putting some kind of thing on. I don't even know what it was. It seemed to help it a lot, but that was like a red marks. I don't know exactly what your red marks look like, but I do believe that some of their equipment that they use on you, in this case, I believe it was the thing that they attached to draw sperm, that, you know, there is bacteria and stuff where they're at that's unusual to our planet. And I believe I was probably exposed to that. The reason the dermatologist, I mean, they took a sample and everything, had no idea what it was. So that could be a reason for something appearing on your chest. They could be whatever the equipment they were using, you know, could leave some kind of bacteria residue. I believe that's what happened to me in the groin area. And I've since talked to a couple different people with very similar things. And they're embarrassed to talk about it because, oh, you know, it happened in the groin area. But the thing is, it's like, when you're talking about this stuff, it's really important that everybody brings out and get past, you know, the embarrassment issue, because there is a sexual aspect to it, and you know, you're nude a lot of the times and stuff like that, and you really just have to get past all that and realize that these are medical procedures that's being done, and even the sexual stuff, I mean, there's nothing you can do about it. So there was stuff that it was embarrassing for me to write about, but I wanted to put it out because that's what happened. You know, I didn't want to like just put out some of what happened and just because I'm embarrassed or something, not put out the rest. And so I pretty much laid it all out there. So I would pay attention to them. And my only guess on that particular situation, especially if you're having that kind of that many sightings, would be some kind of something from the equipment that if they are indeed taking you. You know, it's something you want to pay attention to for sure.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for your call. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. Join the conversation. And also, if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can send us a flash message or call us. Okay, you got two options open to you. Brett, let me ask you this. You're talking about these marks. Have you ever had burn marks on you? And by burn, I'm talking like it was like a sunburn.
Not really. Nothing that I didn't think was an actual sunburn. And I'm really kind of dark complected, so I really don't burn that. I mean, I don't even get sunburns all that easy. But and I lived in the desert for 27 years, so I was exposed to a lot of sun. Mm-hmm. But I've never, my physical things have been really like most, besides what I just mentioned, the scars. I've got two puncture marks and on my side, just down from the armpit. I have no idea where they came from. And I've got a really large scar on my lower back that basically I've had the doctor tell me that was when I was talking about or referring to earlier, and he asked me when I had back surgery, and I never have. But the scar, the only time I ever got really sick in my life, when I was about 14, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, and I kept getting weaker and weaker and losing weight, and I was getting in pretty bad shape. And then I had a dream that, and this is before I even had any kind of call it the awakening, but that I knew what was happening to me. But I woke up after having this dream of seeing these alien creatures tell me I was going to be okay, and I just started getting better like immediately, and my appetite came back, and I started just feeling a whole lot better. And it was soon after that I was at the kitchen sink, and I had my shirt off. My mom came up and asked me about, where'd you get that? How'd you get that scar on your back? And I didn't know what she was talking about. And so, I went and looked in the mirror, and I was like, wow, I have no idea. And so she called the family doctor, and he's like, oh, boys that age, they get stretch marks or whatever. And we just like, okay. And that was it. But, as time went on, I got another one, and then I got a smaller one way high up on my back, and then I realized what stretch marks actually look like, and it's like, well, these look more like surgical scars instead of stretch marks. And then once, when I went to the one of the time being examined for by a dermatologist, actually, who was the first noticed it and said that, and so that kind of really got me realizing that there were some kind of surgical procedures being done on me and actually leaving scars, straight scars across the spine area of my back in three different spots, and then puncture marks on my side. So, I've had some pretty extreme physical marks left by whatever procedures they're doing.
Have you ever heard of anybody where they had a scar, they knew how they got it, and it was all completely normal, natural, how they got it, and then it disappeared?
I've heard stories like that before, and I had a kind of a similar type thing happen with what I believe might have been like the beginning of skin cancer or something, because being exposed to so much sun and everything when I was, like I talked about earlier, like going to Lake Mead and all that, and we had a family business in Las Vegas, and I've been noticing like something coming up, and it was sort of in my left chest area, and it kind of got my attention because it looked like possible skin cancer. And I remember going into work one morning, and my mom worked there, and I pulled my shirt up, and I was like, "What do you think of this?" And she said, "Yeah, you better get that checked out." And so I called, made an appointment to go have a dermatologist take a look at it, and couple days later I was shaving, just happened to glance down there, and it was no longer there, just completely gone, no trace of it whatsoever. And it was about the size of a dime, so it wasn't some, it was I mean, somewhere between like the size of end of a eraser and a little bit bigger than that. You know, not quite as big as a dime, but somewhere in that diameter. So I went to work, and I told my mom, I said, hey, can you take a look at this, this area that we thought was skin cancer? She goes, why did it get worse? And I didn't say anything. I pulled my shirt up, and she's like, well, where is it? And so, you know, she was as flabbergasted by it as I was, but that had to be a similar type case, you know, where they mm-hmm. just took, I mean, there was just no trace of it whatsoever. Once again, it goes back to, keeping me healthy.
I used to have a scar right across, for those who are able to watch, right across the top of my right arm, forearm, and near my wrist. Now, I got that scar when I was a kid. I know exactly how I got that scar. I had that scar until I was an adult. I never noticed that it was gone. But after that event in 2007, I noticed it wasn't there anymore. Hmm. Now, I'm 59, so in 2007, I'm in my 50s, and I've had this scar all these years, right?
Right. So you're used to seeing it.
Yeah. My mom knows about that scar.
Right.
My mom, while she treated the injury, was scolding me for how I got it when I was a little kid. And because I was breaking some rules, as per normal, when I got this injury. That scar's gone. It's just not there.
And, yeah, there's no doubt that they had the technology to do that.
Yeah, but why? Question would be, why would they care to remove a scar?
A lot of it is mental. A lot of the things that they do is they're monitoring your mental reaction to whatever, whatever that happens to be, the particular case, and even something as simple as that, because this is the stuff that they lack. And any kind of emotional reaction, whether it's everything, fear, happiness, sadness, whatever, that's the things that they're interested in. And it could be something as simple as that. I mean, they removed it. Obviously, they let you remember the event of hitting the guy. And if you notice it soon after that, I would think that they did that on purpose. Just like they left the scars on me on purpose.
I'll tell you what, he impressed me.
That's impressive.
He impressed me. I have done that to a few other people in my career. And I never saw anybody that just stood there like nothing happened. And so it was, I was impressed. And it was one of those uh-oh moments where you thought, uh-oh, this is not going to end well. But, they disappeared.
What color hair did he have? What was his facial? I mean, he just looked, was there
exactly as you described. Hmm. He had kind of a little bit of a square face. He had short black hair. He had the black uniform, but he was wearing a hat.
Hmm. Wow, that's interesting. They were so close to the same type of individuals that I've seen.
And he had a little gray on each side of him.
Hmm.
I know there are people that are listening. They're saying, yeah, I knew this guy was nuts. Well, okay. I can live with that. We'll be back right after this, so don't go away. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, so if you're going to call, do it now. You'll run out of time otherwise. 623-444-5889. We have a flash message from John in Australia. He says, "Good day, Kevin. I've heard you say previously that you have not been abducted. Now you're talking about it. So which is it, mate?" You heard wrong. I've never said I wasn't. I said I don't remember being abducted. And that is quite a different story. As I tell you this story tonight, which is not new, I've told this on the air before, am not telling you about my abduction experience because I don't remember it. This is at the end. I'm back home at this point. I'm in my room at this. I don't remember what happened. I don't remember being taken. I don't remember where I was taken. I remember this. And I had physical marks on me after this. So that's the answer, John. I still have some of those marks, by the way. Okay. Got a question for you. Is there a particular time of day, Brett, when it seems to be their favorite time to come and get you?
Yeah, there is. It's usually 3 a.m. to about 3:40, right in there. A lot of times it would be exactly particular times. You know, it would bounce around in between there, but you know, it would stay like, you know, 3:16, 3:16, and then it was 3:27, then 3:33, but it's most always during that particular time frame is when I do happen to notice the time.
Okay, so let me ask, why, in your opinion, just your guess, why do they have a time slot?
The only thing that I could conclude from that is just it's a good time to do it. I mean, it's the exact middle of the night. The time most likely that somebody, even if they stay up late, they're going to be in bed at that time. It makes it easier for them.
So they really, they can operate 24 hours a day because it's 3 a.m. somewhere 24 hours a day.
Yeah, I mean, that's just my particular case. I don't think it really matters. I mean, there's a lot of cases, you know, where people get taken in the daytime. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the cases with driving in cars and just different. It doesn't really. I don't think the place and time, but I do think that's the most common is usually sometime when people are asleep. I just think it makes it easier for them.
We only have, we've got 5 minutes left. But in this 5 minutes before I have to start bringing it in for a landing, do you want to address a possible connection between the UFO alien abduction hybridization thing and ghosts?
Yeah, I think that, and I've noticed this time and time again, and also with my own experiences, that not so much with ghosts. Obviously, ghosts are in another dimension, and I think that, like I've mentioned earlier, that the aliens are using interdimensional travel in order to abduct people. And I have found time and time again that our energy level in our bodies, the abductees, once you're taken, like I believe in my ghost research, that they're vibrating at a faster rate than us in the dimension that they're in. And even some of the EVPs that come in sometimes, you know, they'll be faster and you have to slow them down. But it seems like that the energy gets changed from the abductees, and you start vibrating at the same faster rate, which makes it easier for those in the spirit world to be attracted to you. Mm-hmm. And also your psychic awareness gets opened a whole lot more. I'm certainly not claiming to be a psychic and stuff, but I have had a lot of experiences that would fall under that classification. And there's abductees that I've met who have taken that and embraced it and really are like to the point of like becoming mediums. But they've had the same type of thing. Like,
well, have you noticed any enhancement of any skills?
Well, I've noticed that a lot of times, like, I've known how to do stuff. Actually, I'll take music for an example. Like, you know, I've never taken a guitar lesson in my life, and I'm a pretty good guitar player. And just stuff like that, you know, like, really, like, I don't know. There'll be certain stuff, like, sometimes that you don't understand why you know this or how you know it or how you know that how to do it, but you just do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's sort of one of those things that maybe a benefit of being taken, that they're putting this in your subconscious and you're just kind of reaping the benefits of it, whether you know it or not.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Do you have a website that you would like to direct us to?
Well, I'm just putting up the website for Children of the Grays, but it will be childrenofthegrays.com. I should have that up shortly. In the meantime, I've set up the Facebook page, just facebook.com, Children of the Grays. And, you know, feel free to like that. We're going to be sharing and posting a lot of stuff for abductees and those that are interested in it. And, you know, my wife and I have our Halo Paranormal Facebook page as well, where we do a lot of the ghost research. And, you know, a lot of this stuff does overlap. You know, we have found that out. So especially like what I just talked about, you know, we found a lot of similarities with that. And even the ability, clairaudient ability, you know, which I've had since I was a kid, never had any idea where it came from, but I'm thoroughly convinced now that it has to do with the abductions, because I've seen it in other people that I've met that's had these experiences, had the exact same things.
You mentioned that you're part Native American. Do you know from what group, from what tribe?
Well, one of my grandmothers is Cherokee. Mm-hmm. And my great grandmother was half, I don't know what, and my other grandmother was also half, but it was kind of back in those days where if you were mixed, you didn't tell people, so, you know, at least that's what I was told. So the only one I know for sure is Cherokee.
Almost every white person in America, if you've been here for more than two or three generations, if your family has, are mixed. and not all, but almost all are mixed. And a great number of those are mixed with Native American. And, you know, and but it's my great-grandmother was Cherokee.
Oh.
So.
Well, you know, Cherokee, they claim that their ancestors came from the stars, so.
Yeah, but a number of the Native groups make the same claim. Yeah. And it may be true. It may absolutely be true. I don't know. Do you, well, we're out of time. So are you willing to come back and talk with us again?
Sure, Kevin. I'd love to.
Okay. Well, we'll do that, and I can ask that question then.
Okay.
If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I close the show. I'd like to chat with you for a moment. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Brett Oldham. The title of the book is Children of the Greys, spelled G-R-E-Y-S, Greys. And you can check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/Children of the Greys. And coming soon will be childrenofthegrays.com, but not yet. It's under development. We appreciate Brett for being with us and sharing this information with us this evening. And I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you'll tell your friends, your neighbors, your enemies all about the Kevin Smith Show. And who knows, some of your enemies may tune in and become my friends, you know. So go ahead and tell them, you know. Whether people like us or don't like us, we like for them to listen. All right? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You may call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.